Good stuff. Thank you, Matt. Appreciate Matt being here leading the scene, and Terry for leading us in our crosstalk and those words, and Hunter for opening prayer. Good to see everybody. Seems like everybody's just like... I'd expected that last week when we had breakfast, but everybody, I think everybody got fired up. They got all that sugar in their bodies. But we do have, for those that are visitors, we have an open feast, which is a luncheon today. So we hope that you'll stay and participate with us for that. If you want to turn to Genesis chapter 39, Genesis 39, we're going to start a series during the summer of just Bible characters, some characters within Scripture that teach us amazing lessons, that teach us things that we can... take with us each Sunday. And so we'll begin this morning. We're going to talk about Joseph. Now, one of my favorite characters, I don't know if you guys know Hee-Haw very well, but Hee-Haw is one of my favorite old-timey shows. And Archie Campbell was a beast. He's the old, how are you? I just saw a face I hadn't seen in a while. Good to see you and Kaylee this morning. Good to see y'all. He's just one of my favorites. He would always be the guy in the bartender. Barbershop. Yeah, I don't know where I got bar part right. I just didn't get the other part. Barber chair. And he was always telling stories. He reminds me of one of the stories. I love you too. Bye bye. They're going off to camp. One of my favorite stories is he's talking to another individual and he says, yeah, he said, had some bad news this week. My grandfather died. And the guy goes, oh, that is bad. He goes, well, no, that's good because he gave me $50,000 because he loved me so much. Oh, well, that's good. No, that's bad because the IRS came in and the IRS took about half of it. You know, sorry, suckers. They took all my money. And he's like, well, that is bad. He goes, no, that's good. He goes, they at least left me enough money to buy something that I've always wanted, something Craig Fitzgerald would love as well, a stunt plane. And he's like, well, that's good. He goes, well, no, that's bad, because after I learned how to fly the stunt plane, I was doing a triple barrel roll and I fell out of the plane. And he's like, oh, that's bad. He goes, no, that's good. I don't want a parachute. Okay, well, I guess that's good. He's like, well, no, that's bad, because when I pulled the ripcord, the parachute didn't open. And so I started falling faster and faster. And he says, well, that's bad. No, that's good, because I was over a field and there was a huge haystack right in the middle of the field. And he says, well, then that's good. He says, no, that's bad, because as I got closer to the haystack, there was a pitchfork right in the middle of the haystack. That's bad. No, that's good, because I missed the pitchfork. And he says, well, that's good, right? And he says, no, that's bad, because I missed the haystack too. Right? And that's kind of one of his old stories. Every time I think of that story, I think of Joseph. I mean, Joseph's life was just this good news, bad news. You think it's going to be a shiny day, and it turns out to be a pretty gloomy day. I mean, think about the fact that he was Jacob, the patriarch Jacob's favorite son. You go, well, that's good. It's his favorite son. No, it's bad, because all the brothers hated him because of the love that Jacob showed his father. You remember he gave him that beautiful coat. And so you say, well, you know, he gives him this beautiful coat. That's good. No, that's bad, because it turns out that favoritism caused all these problems with his brothers. And so Jacob sends Joseph off to go check on his brothers. He trusted Joseph. He believed Joseph would give good reports. You say, well, that's good. Well, no, that's bad, because when he goes to visit his brothers, they see him from afar, and I guess it was pretty obvious to be able to see him, because he on that coat of many colors. It's kind of like, you know, wearing a vest or something. And so they plot to kill him. And you say, oh, that's terrible. That's bad. No, that's good, because Reuben steps in and says, no, we can't kill our brother. And so they just throw him into a pit. And you say, well, that's bad. No, that's good, because they didn't kill him. But then the bad part came when he was sold to the Ishmaelite traders. And that's where I want us to kind of pick up on the story a little bit and learn a few things from his life. So if you found chapter 39, this is where we're at. He's sold to some Ishmaelite traders. Granted, he didn't get killed. But these Ishmaelite traders are going all the way to Egypt. And that's where we pick this up. Starting in verse 1, we have it on the screen. Thank you, Evan, for doing that. And thank you for Jim for putting it all together. Now, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph, so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph himself, he found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household. He entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. That's good, right? No, that's bad. Because verse 6 says that Joseph was handsome and well-built. Okay, we got a lot of single girls on the front row, right? It means he was a stud. He's a stud. Joseph's a stud. He's well-built. He's handsome. He's the guy. I'm sure he had a deep voice too, right? And so he is going to work. And you say, well, that's good. You know, God blessed him with this physical. No, it's bad. Because the very next verses start telling us that Potiphar's wife sees him and says, I want more than you to just serve me. He wants to get out of there pretty quick because she's making advances toward him. And in one such encounter, she grabs his cloak, his outer garment, and Joseph does the right thing. He runs. I mean, he just runs, right? And you say, well, that's good. No, that's bad, because then she turns it around. She says, no, Joseph is the bad guy. Joseph is the one that's immoral. Joseph is the one who doesn't have any morals. He's the one that came after me. He's the one that needs to go to jail. And that's exactly what happens. We pick the story back up. If you look in verses 20 through 23, Joseph gets hung out to dry. So Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. I mean, we see the same pattern. He showed him kindness. He granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. So God, even through these circumstances, you can say, oh, this is so bad. This is such a horrible thing that's going on in Joseph's life. And yet God is still working his magic. He's working for the good of Joseph. And Joseph sees it. And we know that because we're going to read some verses here in just a minute to show us that. In chapter 40, verse 1, something happens that is extremely impactful on Joseph's life. The cupbearer of the king, of Pharaoh, and the baker of the king are both thrown into the prison. Just happens to be the same prison that Joseph's in. And so they come, and the prison guard there puts Joseph in charge of them. I guess he develops a decent enough relationship. They understand him. He understands them. And they have dreams on the same night. They both involve 3 days. And Joseph interprets the dreams. First, he interprets the dream of the cupbearer, and the cupbearer gets good news. He says, hey, you're going to be restored. You're going to get to go back, hang out with Pharaoh. You're going to go back to serving him. You're going to go do all the things that you did before. And so he's like, sweet, good deal, right? And then the baker's like, yes, what about me? You know, not so good. He ends up being killed. And Joseph tells him the truth. He says, hey, I hate to tell you, but in 3 days' time, you're going to be impaled on a stick and the king's going to kill you. You know, not a good result to the story. And so as the cupbearer is leaving, Joseph says to the cupbearer, hey, remember me. Remember me when you get to Pharaoh and remind him of my plight. You know, he knows that he was unjustly convicted, all of those things. And you say, well, you know, that's really good. No, that's bad. Because the cupbearer gets back to Pharaoh, gets back and does the same, totally forgets about Joseph, leaves him hanging for 2 years. I mean, 2 total years of sitting there thinking, well, you know, what happened to my buddy? Going to hook me up, you know, kind of a deal. Well, the rest of the story goes fairly quickly. You know, if you'll remember, Pharaoh has a couple of dreams, you know, the big sheaves of grain are swallowed up by these little skinny sheaves of grain. Then he has the dream about the big fat cows are swallowed up by these little skinny cows. And nobody can interpret it. And Joseph comes in and says, hey, there's going to be 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. And God's going to, you know, can bless you during these 7 years. But boy, it's going to be followed up with seven pretty horrible years. And so Pharaoh puts Joseph in charge of everything. Remember, he was kind of like the second in charge, vice president of Egypt. And that was his job. And God blessed him there too. And God did amazing things through Joseph's life. And I want you to think about this for a second. Maybe, just maybe, with Joseph going to be in charge of all the things that took place in Egypt, he needed a little time in Potiphar's house to learn how to work, to learn his job, to get the experience necessary to do those things. I mean, he'd already been put in charge of some of the things in Jacob's family. He's been put in charge of things in Potiphar's place. Now he's been in charge in a prison. He's getting some experience. I mean, you got to find the rainbow wherever you can find the rainbow. And then Joseph is put in charge of all of Egypt. And if you remember the story, goes something like this, that he builds these huge vats and he saves up all of the plenty. And archaeologists to this day can go to some major cities there around that area. And they found these huge vats, these monstrous storage bins. And they say, that's got to be Joseph. He built these things to store up the grain. And then Israel, Jacob, and the heritage that was going to be left there, they were the family of promise. They're going to starve to death, but Egypt saves them. And so the brothers come, and on the second trip, Joseph does the whole reveal and says, hey, by the way, I'm your brother. But what are some things we can learn from the life of Joseph and apply to our lives? Three things. Okay, Joseph had integrity. Joseph had integrity. He had the ability to forgive. And he trusted God in all circumstances. Integrity. Let's go back to the story of Potiphar's wife. Integrity. He did the right thing. Even if it was going to cost him something. That's the kind of integrity that we as Christians should have. Regardless of our circumstances, we should allow God to work in our life, and we should be honest about it. We should take care of the things that are right. He ran because it was the right thing to do. Now think about this. I love what he says. How can I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? Chapter 39, verse 9. It wasn't just a sin against Potiphar. It was a sin against God himself. And he recognized that. And he could have been easily angered at God, don't you think? Wouldn't that be fair that with all the things that took place, that maybe he could rationalize, you know, that, hey, God's not here with me. God's not taking care of me. God's not doing anything with me. Maybe a little jealous about how things worked out for others. But that's not what happens here. He desires to love and obey God regardless of all circumstances. And I think that's something that we can learn. So when things are great, we worship God. When things aren't so great, we go, you know, sometimes to God. And that's not the way it should be. Integrity says, hey, I'm going to worship God regardless of any circumstances that come my way. Number two, a forgiving heart. The brothers did some pretty horrible things against him. I can't imagine what it would feel like to be attacked, stripped of my coat of many colors, stripped of my probably most likely outer garments, and then they were going to kill him, but instead Reuben steps in and they throw him into a cistern. I mean, it's bad enough for that to happen, for somebody to attack or hurt you. Okay, it's twice as bad, or three times. I mean, I don't know how many times as bad when it's your own brothers. It's your own family. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, I know you guys probably hit around on each other a little bit every once in a while, right? But never, did they ever throw each other in a well or anything? Okay, so safe, right? But you just can't imagine this idea of your own brothers, you know, doing something against you like that. And yet, after the manipulation, you know, after the jealousy on their part, after the plotting and the lying and the murderous hearts, Joseph says this in Genesis 45, verses 4 and 5. I think we have that there as well. Thank you. Then Joseph said to his brothers, I don't know why. Come close to me. Come. Y'all get in here tight. We're gonna get a little huddle. And when they had done so, he said, I'm your brother, Joseph. I don't know if it's because he didn't want anybody else to know, or if he wanted to look them eye to eye and face to face and just see them go, gulp. You know, it's like, what? We thought you were dead. We thought you were sold into slavery. When they had done so, he says, I am your brother, Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And here's this, verse 5. Look at this incredible wisdom from Joseph. And now do not be distressed don't be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. That's incredible wisdom on Joseph's part. In fact, he tells them, not only will I forgive you, but I don't want you to stress over it. I want you to forgive yourselves. Be free of guilt. You know, you meant it to be bad, but God meant it to be good. And you need to recognize God's hand in this whole process. He was able to forgive because of his vision, which kind of brings up number three. He saw this huge picture. Joseph had this huge picture and how God was working in his life. So he totally trusted God. I think the secret to Joseph's ability to forgive was his ability to see God working in his life. The idea that God was constantly doing wonderful things. It's kind of like the story I told the kids. The old man in the story says, good, bad, who knows? You know, is it good that the horse ran away? Well, yeah, it's a bad thing. Well, I don't know. It brought a bunch of more horses. Oh, that's good. No, that's bad. You know, and situations. Have you been there in your life where you thought something was a good thing and it turned out it wasn't such a good thing? And then that really, really bad thing that you went, oh, man, that's just not so great. And then you went, oh, that turned out pretty good. That wasn't what I was expecting. I don't know about you, but I look at things in my life like that. One author wrote this: a lesser person might have complained and given up. When all this bad stuff is going, I'll just complain about it and I'll just quit. But not Joseph. That's what Joseph did. I love Jeremiah 29:11. You know, it was written much further past the life of Joseph, but I believe it exhibits Joseph's faith in God, because it says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." And when Joseph looked back at his life, he saw those things. When he looked back and understood, God allowed him to be sold into slavery because he had a plan for him, that he wanted him to get to Egypt. It helped him to trust God more. When he looked back, Joseph understood God allowed this huge injustice in his life. I mean, he did the right thing and he was wrongly accused for it. But as he looked back, he realized, wow, I would have never met the cupbearer. I would have never had a chance to then eventually meet Pharaoh himself. And maybe, just maybe, when he looked back, he understood why the cupbearer forgot for a couple of years, because he learned so much as he was learning how to organize and run people's lives and to do all the things that he did. He got some valuable experience. Joseph understood God never left him. And I think we need to learn that God was faithful to Joseph just as Joseph was faithful to God. And so we just can't look at things in our life and just automatically assume that that's a bad thing or that's a good thing. Just be patient and step back and look at that situation for what it is. Like Joseph, we need to trust God. We need to know we might not understand right now why life is the way that it is, and be patient enough to realize one day we'll understand. Look at Romans 8:28 as I conclude this morning. All right, I think it's a perfect place for us to stop and just think. And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose. So even if bad things happen, whether or not they are sent by God as a test, whether they are sent by Satan as a temptation, whether it's just life as life we know it, God is still going to take those situations and try and turn them into something good. All right? And we just need to be faithful and understand that it's okay, that life is going to happen the way it's going to happen. And we also need to clarify this, that God is going to do what God does on His time and according to His plan. Because sometimes we want, you know, we pray those prayers and we want the answers like in days or weeks or months. And yet God sometimes works in years. You think Joseph was all fired up? You know, he's like, oh, God's working, man. I'm interpreting these dreams. He could only do it through the power of God Himself. He interprets the dreams. He's like, I'm getting out of this place 2 years later. Now, here's what's killer. According to chapter 37, verse 2, Joseph left home when he was 17 years old. 17. Teenager. I mean, you guys are older than that, but not much. 17 years old, he leaves home. But according to chapter 41, verse 46, when Joseph finally met Pharaoh, he was 30. 13 years. 13 years going through this ordeal of leaving home before he actually meets Pharaoh. And then you got 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of famine. And somewhere in those 7 years when he sees his brothers. So he's probably 37, 30, 40 years old, 41 years old. And he's had time to reflect on God's love and God's hand in his life. And he recognizes that God meant everything for good. And I know that for a fact, because if you'll look in Genesis 50, and we're going to put those verses up here in just a sec, or they're right there. Good for you. All right. No, they're fine. I just wanted to set it up. What happens is Jacob dies, right? Jacob passes away, and his brothers are still worried that Joseph is now going to say, well, now that dad's out of the way, I'm getting my revenge. And yet Joseph had already said, hey, not only do I forgive you, you forgive yourselves, and just let it go. And realize God's in charge of all this stuff. And so Joseph has to reassure them, because they come to him fearful and afraid and thinking, well, we'll be your slaves. And he's like, what? What are you talking about? Look what he says. Joseph said to them, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. I mean, Joseph's got an incredible life. I mean, I love the story. And you know what? The story basically ends right about there. I mean, the next few verses tell us that Joseph also dies and goes and wants to be buried with his father and go back to the land. But we need to be like Joseph. We need to be people of integrity. We need to be people of integrity, regardless of circumstances, be people of integrity. We need to forgive easily, and not only forgive, but remind those that we forgive to forget. It's like, hey, I'm going to forget about it. You forget about it too. Don't have that guilt. And then we need to trust God, even when we don't understand our circumstances. Even when we think it's bad, God's going to work it out for good. And I know that's for sure, because he promised us eternal life. And regardless of anything that happens here, we've got a place to go that's going to be amazing. If there's anything that we can do for you this morning, we're going to have a song of invitation. And